more and more people are starting a family with IVF. It's a simple fact. There's a lot of people talking about it online, and I reckon it's good to bring awareness to it and kind of remove any shame that people may feel for going down that road. But along with the financial journey of IVF, there is a price tag, there is an out-of-pocket cost. So we're going to talk about some of that today, but also we're going to get down into the weeds around super contributions, whether we tweak our investments in super now while the market's quite hot, or do we wait it out a little bit? We're going to get into some trouble along the way. I'm joined today by James Millard. He's from Sufficient Funds. Sufficient Funds have helped so many listeners of This Is Money over the years. They've got lots of clients who listen, and they're a full financial advice business. They've also got an in-house mortgage broker. So if you are getting financial advice and you want a one-stop shop, they can lean over and pull the mortgage broking machine up and help you without having to go anywhere else. We're just a big fan of professional advice on this podcast, and today it is brought to you by Sufficient Funds. I just made that up, James. You are the sponsor today.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
Welcome back to This Is Money.
My hands in my pocket again.
Yeah, exactly.
Appreciate it.
You can buy dinner. All right, my name's Glenn James, and this is Money.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rightio, James, welcome back to the show. It's been a hot minute, but you've been on the show many times over the years.
Thanks, Glenn. Good to be back.
It really is. Now, there is a question that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the episode around this IVF thing.
Yes.
Because you and Tash have been through it, so you've got practical experience at the coalface in relation to the emotional costs, the money costs, and everything else that comes with it. But before we get onto that, James in the Facebook group, This Is Money, said, "Hi all, I'm considering using up some of my carry forward contributions in super. It's my understanding that this year's contributions need to be used up first, then it will start paying off the 2018/19 leftover balances. So do I need to fill out any forms, or will the extra monies now start paying off the leftover from 2018 and 2019? Thanks in advance." I thought it was just an amount and it just comes off.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, look, the thing to think about here is carry forward contributions are known as what's concessional. They're concessional contributions. So concessional means you're making that contribution to super pre-tax.
Yes.
As opposed to post-tax, which is non-concessional. So there are some rules around how much you can put in each year. This year it's $27,500. It has been for a couple of years running now. And what a carry forward contribution means is that on top of that $27,500, which is a combination of your employer's contributions on your behalf, the super guarantee contributions, and any salary sacrifice, so those pre-tax contributions that you might make. If you go over 27.5, usually you get stung with a bigger tax rate for that.
Mm.
However, if over the last 5 years there's any gap where you haven't hit that cap in any point in time, you can use this carry forward to go back and fill that up. So what James is asking about there is, okay, I'm going to go over that 27.5, we would assume, and I've got some more money to put into super. I want to do that. And what does that look like?
And it really is something we probably need to talk about more, because for those who are in a good enough position to have, quote unquote, leftover money, I mean, most of us would have room in the carry forward contribution threshold, right?
Yeah, you would definitely assume. And I think for your listeners and our clients, everyone's young. Mm. And so for James, if he's got room, if he didn't hit it in that 18-19 year cap, so it's a 5 year rolling target. And so this year is the last year you can go back to 2018-19 to fill that cap.
Okay. So yeah. So my question, I guess, to you, James, is if in 2018-19 you didn't work at all, there's a full $27,500 you can use.
100%.
So yeah, you have to be onto that. But for an example, if you put 27.5 in now because you didn't do it in 2018-19, is James asking whether they will instantly allocate it back to there or whether it will just get allocated to the most recent year?
Yeah, so James's question is around that, and the answer to that is it goes back and fills that. So once you've filled your year this year, it'll go back and actually top up the first year that you didn't fill it first.
Right.
So first in, first topped up, so to speak. And so if you top up the 18-19, it'll get, then go to the 20 and the 21 and so forth until you've completed that. And look, strategically, it's a great time to be thinking about putting money into super. If you've got money you don't need, and often this might be it was a sale of an asset or an inheritance or something like that. And we've lots of different clients have cash sitting around for different reasons, but if you've got the ability to put some money into super that you don't need in the short term or even a bit longer down the track, super is the absolute best place for money when you get to retirement because it's a tax-free bucket. It's amazing.
So you mentioned like inheritance or sale of an asset. If someone sold a property, right, and there was $200,000 profit in their own name and they held the property for over 12 months so they get a capital gains tax discount. So we'll just say the gain is $100,000 and their tax rate was 32.5% at the moment, right? They could theoretically look at the MyGov, and I'm just doing it now. I'm on the ATO, clicked MyGov, hit super, hit information, then I hit carry forward concessional contributions. It will bring it up. And it will tell me, I don't have any left, but it will tell you the amount.
Yeah.
So over the last 5 years, if there was $100,000 that you could use, you could put $100,000 into your super, pay 15% of it as a contributions tax and not pay tax at 30% in your own, or 32.5% in your own name.
Yeah, correct. And for you, you're looking at that in line with your tax planning around what are we actually going to earn this year? And should that be split? If you're a couple, potentially you could be splitting that. We're working on a strategy right now with a client who just sold a couple in Victoria, country Victoria, made a really good profit on investment property, but they're facing this exact problem, capital gains this year.
Yeah.
We're dumping between the two of them. They're going to do 37.5 grand each, which is going to wipe
out over the last 5 years, 37.5 grand.
It's not the total amount. It's enough to bring the tax to zero.
Right.
So strategically, we're looking at, we call them strategy. It's the four stacks of sufficient funds. So debts, savings, investment, super. This one, super's not their only bucket. It's not the only stack we're trying to help them top up. They want early retirement, so they're going to invest outside of super as well. So they're just getting taxed down and minimizing that CGT. At the same time, the plan that we're building for them is paying out the home loan in 5 years, throwing some money into super, but also investing outside of super tax effectively as well.
Yeah. So it's all got to do with just being up to date with your own situation. And if you do have a big event like an inheritance, so for example, we are seeing lots of people receive inheritances, okay? It's a fact.
Yeah.
You know, there is one, I said this to a friend once, he got an inheritance from his father and I'm like, mate, if you buy assets with that money, you'll never, ever, ever lose that money, like good assets.
Yeah.
And for example, if someone did receive a $400,000 or $500,000 inheritance, right? And they were on an okay income, they could put some of that towards the house, but they could use their unused cap over the last 5 years and pay less tax and put money into super for their future as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And if they haven't bought a home, some of those contributions could actually come back out again to be used for the first home super saver if that was something that was relevant for them as well.
Wow. Well, we might talk about that later.
Yeah.
So it really is a good little strategy, but there's a couple of things. It's only to be used if your super balance, and I haven't met anyone really under 40 with super more than $500,000, but your super balance does have to be under $500,000. So
it's pretty rare.
Yes.
It's pretty rare. We've got a client with an inheritance actually right now who's going to tip over that 500 grand mark.
Wow.
And she's mid-30s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, unfortunate circumstances, obviously, and not something you'd wish on anyone. And just to wrap that, finally answering James's question there in terms of the forms, no, James, you don't need to complete anything This is the beauty of these contributions to super. The same with a first home super saver, actually. You don't have to fill in anything at the start. You can just put the money in and it works itself out later.
And is that as long as it is not your employer contributions you can use for the first home super saver scheme?
That's correct.
So it's got to be, and this might be an interesting one, like on your notice of assessment or your, they used to call it like the PAYG summary or group certificate from the old days, it will have on there reportable super contributions. Now, when you get paid your 11.5% from 1 July this year,
yeah.
So those amounts that your employer puts into super, which is your SG, superannuation guarantee, they're considered non-reportable superannuation contributions. So they don't appear on your PAYG summary.
Correct.
It's all good. But if you make a salary sacrifice contribution, that will appear on your payment summary as a reportable super contribution. Because, I mean, I think back in the day, people were like putting salary sacrifice to super and obfuscating, you know, child support or other
these additional contributions now get factored.
Yeah, you can't hide anything. So what we're saying is effectively any reportable superannuation contributions can be used later for the first home super saver scheme.
Yeah, so super first home super saver can be pre-tax or post-tax as well.
Yeah.
Generally, the strategy is to put it in pre-tax and get that benefit because most people are earning enough to make that well worthwhile.
Yeah.
And then, with the first home super saver, you have other limits around that, but we can discuss that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. And just finally, on this carry forward contribution, on the 1st of July this year, the superannuation concessional contribution cap is going to $30,000.
Correct.
From $27,500 to $30,000.
Yeah.
And on the 1st of July, the new tax Stage 3 tweak is happening. So talk to us about maximizing any carry forward now as opposed to after July when the tax rates outside super reduce.
They're a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And so the originally proposed changes were better than what they are now. However, for most people, you're still going to be paying less tax next year than you are this side of July 2024.
Yep.
So if you were to put money in and you're thinking, I'm going to put money into super soon, well, putting it in this side of the financial year is going to give you a better tax outcome than it will after for almost everyone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's definitely a strategic move. If you've got the money now, do it before June. Now, the only other thing to think about is when you're putting money in pre-tax, you can do it through a salary sacrifice through your employer, which is consistent. So every time you get paid, they put some in for you and it adds up over the year. But if you're sitting on, like we're talking about, that lump sum, you need to put that in manually. So you need to make a personal contribution to super. You can get those details straight online from your own login for super. It'll tell you what to do. What you need to remember to do though then is to claim your tax benefit from that. Now, the way to do that is a notice of intent to claim. It's a form on the ATO site. It's lodged with your super fund. It tells you how much you put in. They make that a pre-tax contribution. They'll tax it inside super at a much lower level, 15%, and then you get that reflected in your tax return from there.
And the good thing is, like with this stuff, the ATO is linked to your super fund, so they will have details, but the prudent person should probably look at their super contributions over the last 5 years to make sure it's lined up with the ATO, because I've seen issues with the ATO data feed before when it comes to super where it's not accurate.
Yeah, definitely before you go and make a big move, if you're not sure about the data or if you're worried that you might be pretty close to the cap, check the ATO source, but then check your contributions from your fund as well. You can add them up very easily. Just looking at the transaction statements is a good move.
Yeah. And just while I'm on the ATO website, I'm on super and I've clicked fund details. I've got a super account here that says MLC Insurance Super with a balance of zero. What could that be, James?
That's an interesting question, Glenn. So that is no doubt the super fund that's been set up as part of, I'm guessing, your MLC life insurance or thereabouts.
Yes.
And so what happens there is MLC, when you set up your super fund, they've set up a shell of a super fund. It exists not for you to go and invest in, but solely to receive a rollover from wherever your super sits once a year when the premium's due.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep. So if you see that in, because it's in the active accounts, even though it's got zero, it's still an active account. Some people are like, oh, what's this for? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's why it's there, because when you get death cover and your insurance set up by a financial advisor and the strategy is to hold it within super, often it will be a separate super trustee.
Yeah, exactly. And so we often need to frame clients up around that, because you'll get a letter straight away from your super fund saying, hey, we've just taken $4,000 out for you this year's premium. And if that's the first time you're seeing it, it's good to know that's definitely, it's not a random withdrawal.
Yep.
It's going to be your first year's premium on that new policy.
Yeah, awesome. Let's go, while we're talking about super, there's a question here from Nikki. Hi all. Oh, how funny. Nikki's question starts with the same as James's question. Hi all, I'm considering. Hi all, I'm considering changing my super investment allocation to something a little more high growth.
Whoa, whoa.
My query is whether it's wise to do this with the market performing pretty strongly ATM. Should I wait for a downturn to change investment options? Realize that's a way to lock in losses if you move to a less riskier option, but I'm not sure if it goes the other way. So what do we think with this one?
Okay. So, I mean, firstly, regardless of timing, the decision to go to something like high growth needs to be based on your understanding of your own tolerance of risk as an investor. Now,
and if your risk tolerance isn't at growth or high growth and you're under 50, get it there. Be super.
So, I mean, obviously the longer you have, the more risk you can take in theory, and that makes a lot of sense. And most of our clients, when we ask these questions and we help them work through this stuff, they come out as high growth or aggressive or whatever you want to call it at that level. And so if that's you, then you should be there already. And if you're not, then you should make that move as soon as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And so that's the really short answer for you, Nikki, is locking in losses or locking in gains, whichever way you want to look at that. It's not actually about that. It's about stepping back and saying, well, what tolerance of risk am I happy to take? And this, you know, this is the jargon, is you call it asset allocation. So if you take a high growth approach to super, you're going to be invested predominantly in growth assets. And so really, really simply, that's shares and property, maybe some infrastructure. And if you're in the defensive side of things, and that might be 80%, it might be 90%, it might be 100% growth, depending on your approach there and what that super fund will do for you. And on the flip side, the defensive is more cash and fixed interest like bonds and that type of thing.
But like if Nikki, for example, today, at the time of this recording, we're in March. If Nikki moved from her balanced, which could be 70-30, 70 growth, 30 defensive, to high growth 90-10, and just did it tomorrow. If you fast forward 25 years, Nikki, and ran a parallel universe and then waited and messed around and tried to time it, you're not going to notice. It's so inconsequential.
It is. And again, I mean, that's probably, that move alone over the long term will probably generate you anywhere between 2, 3, 4% per annum more. And that alone on even a small balance at the moment will make a huge difference.
I just want to talk about with super funds, you know how funds will advertise and like, we've got the highest return for the balanced option and blah, blah, blah. And compared to other funds, we're the best and all that. And I only say this because I'm literally, we just got the chapters back from the editor for the investing book. And I went on a bit of a rant in that book. So what happens is, out there in the wild, in the superannuation world, when they have assets such as infrastructure, so we'll call it an airport, we'll call it a tunnel that's producing income. Now, you've got to think, like, Transurban, the tunnel or the infrastructure bloody conglomerate, their tolls, right, are in debt. Like, there is an agreement that they've got in place with the New South Wales government that the tolls can index, right? Based on, we'll take infrastructure. it's considered a growth asset, right?
Yeah.
However, the current rules with superannuation is the balanced fund, quote unquote, that's been the best performer ever, they can actually have an unlisted airport allocated to defensive.
To the defensive side of things, which makes you then think.
That's right. Yeah. Which it's like, this has performed really well and it's conservative. But for example, if, and this is the case before Sydney Airport was delisted, when Sydney Airport was listed on the ASX, it was a growth asset. And Brisbane Airport is private.
Mm.
Defensive.
Defensive.
So kids out there, just have a cold shower when you see marketing with super funds saying our assets or our funds have been the best performer and it's a balanced fund. Why is that balanced fund acting like a 90-10 growth fund? That's weird.
Maybe because it is underneath it all.
Yeah, and that's maybe because the defensive portion has a heap of growth assets.
Yeah. And some people might not care about that, right? No. But when you think about it, we talk to clients about their investment preferences and, you know, that might be that they want to take an ethical approach. It might be they like the low-cost index fund approach or something a bit more active, a bit more costly. And we understand and unpack all of that. And another one that comes up is transparency. And so when you dive into that type of thing, the thought around having unlisted assets like the Brisbane Airport in your super fund might not faze some people, but others, when they realize that might not be valued all that often, and when they do, it's a pretty loose number, and they've got all sorts of flexibility in how they come up with that.
And the timing of the valuations for the returns.
And the timing of it, and then how that reflects in what your super balance in theory actually is. A lot of people are saying, okay, well, maybe that industry fund isn't for me anymore.
Yeah, but that's it. Like, you just need to be aware that strong, large returns from a balanced portfolio that beat other funds' growth portfolio, you don't get a pass on maths and science. Like, it is fact.
No. So ignore the marketing and
still under the hood.
Back to you, Nikki, around that decision around growth. If that's how you feel about your super right now, then that's essentially where you should be. If it's not yesterday, it should be tomorrow. And I'd be moving that direction when, you know, as soon as you're able.
Rightio, we'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, we are back. Community segment of the week. Let's just get right into it. We asked the Facebook group, if you could switch careers tomorrow without any constraints, what would you choose to do and why? Tim said, jet fighter pilot, fly around like a boss and go faster than anyone on the planet. Oh, and get paid megabucks.
Love it. I'm reminiscing of a time we spent in a boat on the harbour with jets flying around
Newcastle
our heads.
Air Show,
that
yeah.
was fun.
I had Jimbo out there on my boat with some other friends. It was fun.
And the kids who really needed earmuffs, but that was fine. So Sarah said, chocolate taste tester at Hayes. My God, Sarah, you couldn't pick a better chocolate shop.
How funny. I went to Hayes at QVV a couple of weeks ago. I was with a friend and we're both buying chocolates, right?
I'll get into the freckles.
Yeah, same. I'm a bandit for them.
They're a killer.
I went up to another counter, bought mine, and they're like, oh, would you like a taste test? I'm like, yes, please. Anyway, then I had my bag of Hayes with my taste test and went around where she was getting served. And the girl said to her, well, would you like a taste test? She's like, yes, please. And then she asked me, oh, would you like a taste test as well? I'm like, yes, please. Still chocolate in my teeth.
But, I mean, honestly, if you're a business out there and you have that ability to offer taste tests, go and do it.
Totally.
I mean, we've been to an ice cream shop recently. Oh, yeah, sounds like we're dating a lot. We're not.
Yeah, no, not yet. we had ice cream the other night and I'm like, can I get a taste test? Like, no, we don't do it.
Yeah.
Outrageous. You know
taste
who you are.
The whole
Derby Street. Lindsay said, stay-at-home mum while working at a school canteen. It's my simple dream. That's wholesome.
That's cool. I can relate to that in a way.
Mm. You'd make a good stay-at-home mum.
Our school's canteen only opens on a Friday.
Really?
Mm. And they really struggle to get volunteers.
How do the kids eat Monday through Thursday?
I think the parents are generally as organised as they have to be to get that into their lunchboxes.
Wow. Okay.
So, Imogen says Nat Geo Travel Photographer. I've actually got a mate who does a lot of that.
Mm.
That's pretty cool.
Louise said, I'd probably still choose exactly what I do, a rural GP. I feel that having to do some of my hobbies full time would make them no longer fun.
That's a really interesting concept.
Mm.
When I left the corporate world before we started this business, I had 3 months of gardening leave. And I could not surf or mountain bike more. I literally got bored. It was very difficult to fill that void. Well, I mean, we were starting a business, but the phone wasn't ringing and we were taking our time to build it properly.
Mm.
And I had all the time in the world to do this stuff and I couldn't fill it.
It just goes back to that purpose thing, doesn't it?
It does.
Rosa said, surgeon. I think I've watched enough medical shows to be one now. I'm pretty good at diagnosing and knowing where they should cut. I'm also very good at hand hygiene, scrubbing in and would have it down. On a serious note, it would be amazing to save people's lives and feel like you're doing something important.
I think if you watch enough House, you could be a doctor.
Mm.
Or at least deal with all those challenging,
totally.
Really challenging ones. What about Megan? I'd be a vet. Running my own animal rescue sanctuary.
Mm. And Karen said, otter sanctuary owner.
Wow.
What would you do if you could change careers tomorrow with no constraints?
I would be working outdoors doing something lifestyle related for sure.
I reckon like a park ranger would be awesome.
Park ranger. I got a mate who works in, like he's building mountain bike tracks at the moment.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, that's the community segment of the week. Just some housekeeping. Tonight, as you're hearing this, we are in Melbourne for the Sort Your Property Out book tour. It starts at 6:30 p.m. at the Courtyard by Marriott over at Flagstaff Gardens. Come along. I'll probably jump up with the mic a bit after 7 and just kind of do a bit of a crowd breaker, ice warmer, whatever you call it, crowd warmer, ice breaker, I don't know. And then we've got Adelaide Thursday night, the 21st of March, the Intercom there, and then Sydney the 26th of March, P1 Sydney Harbour. It's a great night. The book, it's going great and so much good feedback from that book already. And it is this month that we are reading it for our book club. Finally, the two podcasts that you need to know about if you haven't heard, Financially Fierce with Jess Brady. It's up, it's cranking. It's an awesome podcast. It's just an alternative to money crap if you don't want to listen to me. that's okay. Or if you want some extra money stuff and you want to listen to me for the fun and the vibes and you want to go and, you know, get some serious money podcasting happening, you can subscribe to Financially Fierce. And also, if you are over 50 or 55, check out Retire Right. We're pumping episodes every week now. And please, if you've got parents or grandparents in your life that are over 50/55, forward them the podcast, show them how to use podcasts. It's not that hard. I got my mum and dad onto it. They've got to be willing. That's it. Cool. All right, we'll bump out of the community segment of the week and the housekeeping. Thanks for listening. Let's get back into some questions. Rightio. Ooh, there's one here from Anonymous. Looking at a potential IVF journey after a couple of years of trying to conceive naturally, how much does IVF typically cost? What might affect these costs? And what steps should I follow? Obviously, we have been talking with our GP, but now looking at the financial implications, we have some savings of $40,000 in an offset of our mortgage. This was going to be for another property, but we're thinking of pressing pause on that if we need to fork out thousands for IVF. For context, I'm 34 and my partner is 37. Yeah, there's a lot there. I think maybe before we do that, I'm just looking at a SMH article. The IVF thing, it says here, it's a financial investment with no guarantees.
Yeah.
So it is probably hard to say. And then the success rates are 33% per frozen embryo transfer, leading to a live birth for patients under 34, to 18.4% per frozen embryo transfer, leading to a live birth for patients over 43. So there is a risk of not happening.
So yeah, this is one of those really complex areas when it comes to the work we do, financial planning and helping people. 70% of our clients are female and we have all these types of conversations. And it's not just an IVF conversation, it's often a fertility conversation in general. We've been through this personally as well, so I can obviously talk to that and bring that experience to the table when it's relevant. Two, I think an advisor might look at initial costs. And you know, one thing to think about, there's a massive difference between something like elective egg freezing or even, say, embryo freezing, which has very set costs, and then that stark diagnosis of infertility. Because that one, Glenn, that comes with possibly years and years of unknown outcomes and associated costs. And they're not just financial. It's physical and emotional as well. And so for anyone going through this, I absolutely feel for you. And, you know, all we can do is talk through it, but also make sure that financially you're as well set up and prepared as you possibly can be. And so the flexibility required around the planning side of things is massive. And it's really just understanding that you're set up, you're ready to go, and which levers might need to be pulled at, you know, during this, what is often such a difficult time. And so when you think about the cost, so Anonymous has asked the cost of IVF. So one round of IVF is about $5,000 out of pocket. That cost hasn't changed significantly.
So what does one round mean or include?
Yeah, so the process of one round of IVF is essentially the preparation of the eggs and the sperm and a whole bunch of testing and things that go on around all of that, which you can Google, and I won't dive into it. I'm not the medical professional. However, the end result is the transfer of an embryo to then ideally become pregnant. And so it's that whole process that costs around $5,000 out of pocket. And then when we talk about frozen embryos, if there are a number of embryos that came out of that initial process, they can be frozen if they're not transferred. So they can be transferred immediately or they can then be frozen.
Yeah.
And a frozen embryo round can be something you do after that if the first one isn't successful, and that will cost you about half as much again.
Yeah, right. I'm going to now just call randomly a mate of mine. You've met Dirty Mike. He's been on the show before. The OGs will know Dirty Mike. And let's ask how they went with IVF.
Do it.
I'm just recording this with, do you know my mate James, Jimbo?
Yeah.
We're just talking about IVF on a podcast.
Oh, Sure.
All right, sweet.
Need the witness.
Right. Hey, Dirty Mike.
Hi, Matt.
All right, Mike. So we're just talking about IVF. What was your experience with Joe Lee and the family and I guess the costs? Like, talk us through your experience.
So we went through, obviously we went to our GP first because you need a sort of referral to go through it all. We went through bulk build IVF.
Right.
So we had sort of two rounds of bulk build. And because of that as well, so I think each round approximately with sort of just paying some costs around that, I think each round probably cost all up about $3,000 to $5,000. You know what I'm like with budgets, so I don't have one. And so I don't know how much it costs. But for me, it was able to be, and because it was so sporadic in terms of its cost, we were able to pay it just out of whatever I'm earning that week. I live week to week, as all your listeners, I'm sure, are now horrified by. But,
Dirty Mike doesn't have any type of budget that he cares for.
No. So I was able to pay the first two rounds, and Joe Lee was working at the time too. So
yeah,
I was able to pay the first two rounds just out of whatever we were getting.
Yeah.
And then the second round that we went to, because they didn't work, they were unsuccessful.
Right.
For us personally, we were unable to retrieve viable eggs for the first two rounds.
Right.
And so we never spent any more than just the first round. We didn't even try retrieval, I don't think. Joe Lee's going to cringe. I have absolutely no idea. I think I blacked it out just because of the emotional toll it took on me. But
yeah.
The first round, there was no viable eggs. The second round, we thought we had viable eggs. I think we pulled out three and one got fertilized, but that didn't last more than 3 days, the embryo. Mm. And so we decided to go private just for a higher level of care and some options. So when you do bulk build, you can't really dictate on what options you choose. They give you what they give you and that is what you get. And then for the bulk build one, that cost about $10,000 all up. We did get some concessions because we'd already gone past threshold.
The safety net, do they call it?
Yeah, something like that. There's a threshold where if you pay a certain amount per year with Medicare, then you can, then a lot more is deducted or something. I don't know what it is exactly. Again, Jolie knows all of this.
Maybe we should have just called her, but hey, we're here now.
Yeah, she might not enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, you hit a certain level of cost in the year. I think it's about $10,000. You hit that Medicare threshold and then a lot of it, you get a full rebate on everything.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And so, how long did it take when you went to private? Like, what was that process?
It was very similar to the public system or the public funded one. We just got to choose sort of which way we went about it in terms of procedures and drugs and all that type of stuff. So it took the same amount of time, really.
So how much do you think all up you spent on IVF and over what time frame?
A lot of the IVF stuff is like the waiting between rounds and things like that, because you've got to sort of, Jolie has to get back to baseline and things like that. Mm. I'd say it's definitely less than 20.
Yeah.
For three goes at it. But because we never really got past we never got to have any viable embryos. Mm. So we never got to freezing embryos, implantation of embryos, anything like that. So just for our cost, just to have three tries at even getting an embryo probably cost us anywhere from, I'd say, 15 to 20.
Yeah. And so at the end of that, over the couple of years, or how long do you reckon? 18 months?
Oh, yeah,
maybe?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Probably 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. You'd invested that money, you'd invested that emotional energy, and there was no baby at the end.
Correct. Not from our investment, no.
Yeah. But how did that feel, like, emotionally after 2 years of all that, and then, like, what did you resolve at the end?
It was crushing.
Mm.
We went back again when we had the private, the private one first. We came back in to see her, there's no such thing as a failed experiment. You can always learn from what's happened and, okay, that didn't work, so maybe something else will work. And she just looked at us and said, I don't know what I can do.
Mm.
We just have to keep trying the same thing over and over again, but it's highly unlikely that this will be successful. And that was, absolutely crushing for us.
Because
it's something that we wanted so much, and to have arguably, a highly successful professional in that field say, I have nothing for you, was, insane.
And I think it's probably worth calling out that the three of us are a bunch of males here talking about something that can heavily impact the male in this situation, but nowhere near as much as the female, the mum, going through all this emotion together with the partner, but also far more in terms of what's happening in their own body and all the pain they have to deal
with
through that process too.
Watching my wife inject herself over and over again with hormones creating moods and feelings inflated by artificially hormones, all that type of stuff. That's the other thing. It's like, for me, obviously, it's something that I wanted and I'd invested emotionally, but the biggest part of it was not that my wife had invested so much more and not seeing her get what she wanted out of this, and there's nothing that I could do about it either. There's nothing that she could do, and there's nothing that anybody could do to help us in this. And that's really, awful.
And just for context, you're both at the time were late 30s?
I may have been 40.
Yeah. But Jo Lee wasn't in her 40s. She isn't yet, is she?
No, she's late 30s.
Yeah.
So she had and this is, again, my not smarts on this. She had a test done and she had a chemical reading. It was extrapolated that she had a low egg count in her late 30s, so possible early menopause, which means her egg count was running low, which is the reason we were given why we couldn't conceive, because as your egg count gets lower, there's a perception, a general idea that the egg quality becomes less. It's not necessarily true, but that was our understanding that that could be happening.
Yeah, so all that, lots of money spent, lots of emotional energy spent. Tell us some good news, please, Michael. I'm leading the witness.
We fell pregnant naturally, so it's a complete waste of money, complete waste of time. Broke us emotionally, and we got pregnant naturally. So,
amazing.
What a waste of time.
Yeah, so Evelyn...
It's not a common story. It's not a common story. I'd just like to end. I have empathy for a lot of people that go through this now. Before, I didn't fully. I think it's one of those things that maybe somebody with greater empathy than I could, but I didn't fully understand how taxing it could be, especially on the guys.
Yeah.
It was so tough. But
Evelyn, beautiful, healthy, young baby, just turned 6 months-ish?
Almost 6 months,
yeah.
5 months and 2 weeks or something. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. See ya.
No worries. Enjoy cutting that one up.
All right. Bye. Well, there you go. I mean, that's a real life story in the wild.
Isn't that good to hear? And look, obviously everyone's journey is very, very different there. I mean, we had been through 4 years pre-IVF trying to conceive and... Tash, my wife, suffers from severe endometriosis and something we discovered and through that process and has now had multiple surgeries in and around that. But endo was the cause for the infertility side of things, and IVF was the ticket to solve that for us. So we got really lucky.
Yeah.
And, yeah, endometriosis month this month.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. Well, just rounding off some financial considerations, when clients like Anonymous come to you and be like, look, we've got these $40,000. I mean, it was interesting because, you know, Mike was saying that they just kind of ad hoc cash flowed it, don't really have a budget, and, you know, I can lead a horse to water.
But sure.
When your best friend, you know, I don't care, he's living his life, he's an adult. I mean, these guys seem like they're good savers, got 40 grand. Maybe they could still do the property and look at optimizing the budget or savings and cash flow. Like, how do you usually approach this?
So I would say potentially the good news here, if we read this question, there's some savings against their mortgage, which tells me they've already got a place, which I'd say there's probably a difference between thinking about buying an investment property or starting a family.
Mm.
I would say you need to really think about what's the biggest goal, and I would suggest I know what it is.
Mm.
If you're already struggling to conceive and this is something that you're really placing a high importance on and you've noted 34 and 37 as your ages, well, I would suggest that this is your focus in the short term.
Mm.
And 40 grand, I mean, I've seen clients, I've seen a good friend. Look, it only cost us 10 grand. We got really lucky in terms of IVF, but 40 grand is not a huge amount.
Well, Michael and Jolie did 20-ish and with no result.
No result. And I have seen one client go through nearly 200,000.
Mm.
And thankfully they have a child now, but it was a very long process.
Mm. But the thing is as well, like money speaking, you know, depending on the property, if you wanted to buy an investment property and still do this, I think one, it comes back to what's your emotional capacity?
Mm.
Like, can you be going through IVF, oh, and by the way, sign here and do this, and you might be finding his buyer's advocate and all that. And as well, you might have equity in the property that you could just set up a separate mortgage split and use that to buy the property and keep this money allocated. So it's not all or nothing. But for me, my advice would be, you know, one of you, I don't know who the male or the female is, but, you know, one of you is 37. Maybe we just try the family thing first and get that moving. I don't know.
Yeah. And look, if IVF is the one thing that allows you to bypass other challenges and make conceiving far easier, then you might find it all happens really quickly. But I would definitely be taking, I think that's an absolute no-brainer, take that step first.
Now, just for balance with this whole IVF thing, I will put a bonus episode up today, same time, and I'll share the story of women in our Facebook group who want to just detail their own journey of IVF. So you can look at that when you finish this episode, or you can ditch us now and go and listen to that, or you might have listened to it first. But Jimbo, just in summarizing and bringing this question for the listener to an end, where to from here?
I would say you've got 40 grand. It's around 5 grand to get started. If you have a bunch of embryos that you're able to then use, it'll be less than that to try again and again, hopefully.
Mm.
So number one, hopefully there's a really good harvest of eggs that turn into a whole bunch of embryos. You can transfer one and you're successful. If not, you've got options. If not, you've got 40 grand there. So essentially, I mean, if we're unpacking this, you could probably go a number of rounds. Now, that's financially speaking. Obviously, the financial side of things is one part. Then there's the emotional and the physical side.
And that's it. Like Michael, he was crushed.
Yeah.
And imagine how Jolie was feeling, as he said.
Exactly.
Injecting
right.
all the time and all that. So, look, financially, you've got no issue. Probably can do both. But, yeah, can you manage both? That's what life is different, and we all can manage things. And I'm probably more the personality. I just need one thing at a time, then the next, then the next. I can't do this thing with plate spinning. I just can't. That's not me.
Yeah. And I still think just with this one is that the gravity of the goal at play here, if you want to call it a goal, starting a family, it's so important. If that's a goal of yours, if you move on and say, you know what, that's not important to us, well, sure, go and buy an investment property.
Mm.
But I would say the investment can absolutely wait. And that's the money nerd speaking. Yeah.
Danny asked, "Hey Brains Trust, I'm looking for some what would you do advice. I'm on 40K per year part-time in my final year of study to be a teacher and have 30K saved for the first home deposit. Half of that is in the first home super saver scheme. So, you know, got 20 grand outside. My partner is on 55, studying a certificate at TAFE that his company is paying for due to finish this year and has no savings and 10 grand left on a car loan. My main goal is to purchase a regional PPOR for 350 to 400 in 2 years, 1 year into my new career, and my partner's goal is to pay off the loan due to be paid off next year, and she's given two options. Would you continue working towards our independent goals and looking at merging our finances when the loan is paid off and her deposit would effectively be 40K, or pay what's remaining of his car loan from the home deposit funds, saving on interest, and save the remaining deposit together? Any advice or ideas are welcome. By the way, love the podcast and the conversations in this group."
Wow, Danny, there's a lot to unpack in this one.
Mm.
So, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. You probably, number one, want to have an initial conversation. Actually, zoom out for a second. Number one is, are you and your partner actually on board with the property goal?
They're not on the same page financially because she's using my main goal is to purchase my and that's fine. And it could be semantics and all that that I'm getting into, but how long have they been together?
Yeah.
Are they living together at the moment? I don't know. I'm a little bit scared.
So number one, be on the same page. If it's a joint property goal, and if so, then maybe you're jointly going to have a quick chat with a mortgage broker, because a mortgage broker, most mortgage brokers, certainly our team, will be very happy to jump in and go, "Hey, let's run some servicing calculators. Let's talk about what does this car loan look like for you? Mm. How much deposit will you actually need?" Because a decision to pay off a car loan is two things. One, that's 10 grand on a car loan that could be going as a deposit.
Mm.
With your property.
Yep.
Yes, there's an interest rate that's probably higher on the car loan, but I think that's a lesser consideration right now. And the other part is, is the bank okay to lend you the money even if you do still have the car loan?
Mm.
And if that's a yes to that question and that you guys can afford the loan without paying it out, then you've got a bigger deposit without paying it out. And I would suggest that's a very valid reason not to pay that out initially.
Mm. Yeah, I think there are too many variables here that we're not sure about. I'm just thinking, if there is a decision that we are buying a house that's a PPOR to live in, we have been together for so many years, we are going to get on the same page financially, we're going to run a household budget, all roads lead to Rome, sure, we have this amount of money saved to buy our house. We pay off the car loan on the proviso that old mate doesn't go back out and get another loan next week. There is another consideration. Do we keep things financially separate, buy the house all in her name, but I'm not sure it will service on that income just yet. But she'll be a teacher when she buys a house. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just very cautious in these situations of, you know, a lot of people don't know, like 67% of our podcast listeners are women, okay?
Yep.
I don't want really good dialed in women like this bailing out people who aren't changing their habits and are just a passenger in this.
I was having this exact conversation with a client this afternoon.
Really?
Before I came over here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I won't go into detail because she'll know I'm talking about her.
Yeah. Hello.
But that is absolutely something that's really important to take into account. And, I mean, we've got a major problem in Australia with the gender pay gap. We've got a major problem that then stems from that with the gender super gap.
Mm.
We've got females being left, you know, the fastest growing proportion of homeless people are women over 55.
Mm.
which is a major alarming concern. And I think, yeah, that's a very valid point to be thinking about there. Now, we don't want to say to a really good, strong couple that you need to be really worried about this type of thing, but I certainly think you should be making sure you're on the same page and making sure you're aligned with these goals. And if not, it's totally okay. You're not rushing. There's no rush here. You're saying you might buy in a 1 to 2 years time.
Yeah.
Well, saving.
What can happen? Keep saving.
I would
let the bastard pay off his own loan in the next year.
I wouldn't be dumping a heap of cash. I've got to be careful. This isn't financial advice. I wouldn't be dumping a heap of cash necessarily into the first home super saver until you're really clear that that's what you absolutely want to do. Especially if you're, you know, I know once you become a teacher, you'll be earning more. But on 40 grand, your tax rate is low to the point that the benefit of the first home super saver is not as great as it might be down the track. And, you know, we can unpack that, but really just in real short terms, the benefit of the first home super saver is the tax benefit you get when it goes into it and then a decent earning rate, which is above the cash rate while it stays in there. And then there's some tax payable on the way out, but it'll be less than what it is on the way in, and then you end up winning. But the win with that first-time super saver comes back to how much
save. I'm just log back into Facebook to read some of the questions.
Are there more?
Just some of the comments, and she provided some more context, which scares me a little bit.
Okay.
So Kimberly said, "You both seem young, so keep going on your own individual goals and finances separate. Can encourage each other to pay off loans, etc." Heaps of people like that comment. So this is the kicker that just made me go, okay.
We're recording this.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. James doesn't know when he walks into my house what's happening.
Back it up.
We're recording, baby. This is as live as it gets.
I'm throwing eyes at Glenn. Are we doing this?
Yeah, I'm literally like laying on my lounge. James obviously lives in Newcastle. Okay, then Danny wrote back to that comment. "Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards. We've been together for 4 years now. I'm 26. He's 35. And seeing how much harder it is to get into property solo has made me consider option B, which was rescue him and put him on and all that."
Yeah.
"Thanks for contributing." And then Brianne actually said, "He's 35 and has no savings or assets besides a car with a loan. Definitely keep your finances separate until he's shown an ability to save. You're likely to be the main income earner with your career versus his." So there's a outstanding, overwhelming amount of comments that basically was just like, you guys just need to keep it separate for now. And it kind of goes back to my saving. My point is like, I'm not doing squat until he proves himself. And like, you're only 26. Man, a lot can happen in the next 2 years once you get into your career, because this is what happens, Jimbo. And I've seen it, not in my own life, but in friends around me. One person in a partnership gets their career up and going and roaring and wants to really start kicking some goals, and the other one's a passenger and a dead weight. Not always, but I'm just using an abundance of caution here to protect her.
And I think Danny needs to look at that through that lens and make her own call around all of that. Obviously, it may be very different, right? We might be calling this guy out in you know, who knows what he's gone through, who knows what he's dealing with and all of that type of thing. But I guess on the surface level, you've been together 4 years, if it's super solid, well then, you know, maybe that is an option. But I guess definitely tread carefully. Yeah.
And maybe, you know, when you get into your career, like you may be earning up to 80 grand, buying somewhere to live in regional town, you'll probably get a mortgage with the deposit you've got. You'll get an LMI waiver because of your career. I reckon you'll be able to do it yourself, Danny, regardless. So, look, it's a great thing. And as you said, yeah, we might be a bit hard on old mate, but, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's good entertainment, this podcasting business. Reese said something else on this comment. keep in mind the vast majority of teachers burn out and leave the profession in the first 3 to 5 years. I'd give it at least a couple of years of teaching before you're choosing to burden yourself with a mortgage. Yeah, maybe. I probably would still do it. Mm. The odds of you needing to make career change during the first or second year of owning his house are not in your favour. Yeah, but I think as well, you're a go-getter, Danny. You'll be fine.
You'll be absolutely fine. And pivot later.
Yeah. And finally, Jade in the Face Bizzle group. Jade Boo, you know who you are. Hey, message me. I want to hear your money story. I've seen your name kicking around these corridors for a long while. Morning crew, bit of advice needed. I'm looking at getting a coffee van for 30K. Is it better to get a personal loan or a business loan for this amount? I haven't had a loan for quite a while and wondering if there are benefits of either. James.
So, look, I guess if you were to be able to get both and they were both on the table, then I'd say a business loan is probably the way to go because it's likely to have a slightly lower interest rate, although there's no guarantee on that. The challenge I think you might have is a business loan for any amount of money will require a solid amount of evidence to show that your business is going to be able to pay that loan. Now, if this is a side hustle, so to speak, and you've got another job and everything's going to flow, well, then they can probably take that into account. It might be that they're looking then for security to back that 30 grand loan.
Yeah, a lot of time business loans will have a personal guarantee.
There'll be a personal guarantee because the business, you know, most of the time a business loan doesn't rely solely on the business. The bank or the lender won't just take the business as the asset unless it's been pumping for quite some time and doing really well.
And because, you know, 30 grand isn't a lot of money in the big bad world, I'm looking at one kind of, you know, second tier lender that does business banking. And on their website right now it says, our range of business lending products start at $250,000 because all the work and effort that's required for them to broker and sort out a business deal, 30 grand is just no money in it. So my encouragement would be, how can you get a bit creative? And if number one, if you're going down the loan route, which I don't suggest you do for small business like this, save up, pay cash.
Definitely.
Because then you got real skin in the game. It lowers the risk. If it doesn't work out, you don't have payments for the next few years.
Yeah, I think saving cash is a great way to start. Another option would be beg, borrow and steal from family where the loan terms aren't going to be crazy, ideally. Those are options.
Yeah.
Crowdsource it.
Yeah.
Probably not though.
If you've got a mortgage, if you're going down the loan, get a cash out. But I'm not getting a loan for 30 grand for a coffee van. I'm sorry. But what I am maybe doing is asking the existing owner, would they be open to a vendor finance type terms and say, I'll give you 15 grand up front now and you've told me this business is profitable. What about you take all profit above this wage for the first year? If you reckon it's profitable, I'll work hard. You can have 100% of profit up to the 15 grand that I'm owing you. If it doesn't turn a profit, you're getting what you're given. I'll run everything through the books, no cash, on card, all that. Maybe there's a chance to get creative with some vendor finance.
Yeah, I think zoom out, make sure the coffee van is your life, because I think my limited understanding of the cafe world and how this would run is unless you're going to be in there pumping it yourself or you've got some...
There's no money
in it. There's no money in it because you're going to have to pay wages until it's really pumping.
A coffee van's a, you know, it's a one operator thing anyway. And if you're not the owner of it, I mean, I'd imagine Jade might be thinking, you know, it's something he'll do. But yeah, it just, I'm not borrowing 30 grand to buy an old Toyota van with a coffee machine in it. But you might be buying the run because they can get friggin' territorial, those coffee people. But also, make sure your coffee doesn't suck. The amount of coffee vans out there that are doing crap coffee kills me.
There's a good one in Merriweather.
Is there, though?
Arlo's is a good one.
Never heard of it.
Well, you got to stop and check it out.
Might have to. Hey, all the best, Jade. Reach out. We'll get you on the show. You can tell us what you did because I'd be keen to hear your story. James Millard, Sufficient Funds, thanks so much for joining us today and having a chat about all the things. You can find Sufficient Funds on Instagram, and you can reach out to sufficientfunds.com.au, Instagram. Thanks for being in our world, James, and looking after a heap of our listeners.
Thanks, Glenn. So good to be here.
All right. Bye.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career or property, we have three books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.